Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. The Tangent is a progressive rock band from Northern England based around keyboards, player, composer, and idiosyncratic vocalist Andy Tillison. Their music is cinematic and lyrical, full of narrative, often telling stories of making observations about the world we live in, often choosing subject matter more associated with anarcho-punk bands than with the genre in which the band choose to base themselves. No hobbits or orcs in our songs. The band have released a steady output of well-regarded albums through their record label, Inside Out Music. The band has changed personnel many times and has used this fluidity to keep ideas fresh and lucid. The debut album released in 2003, The Music That Died Alone, was often referred to as a supergroup project, though Tillison has always eschewed this title, preferring to go for the less obvious, a good idea. In 12 years, the group has had close affiliations with Swedish progressive legends, the Flower Kings. Tangent philosophy has been to embrace other, more contemporary bands, whether overtly progressive themselves, Flower Kings, Spock's Beard, Argos, Magenta, etc., or completely away from the official boundaries of the genre into metal, jazz, modern pop, soul, disco, and film music. The Tangent do not follow the prog rock rulebook. It's more what we do that sets us apart, Tillison said in a 2007 interview. We've always avoided doing the 12-string acoustic stuff, and in fact, anything that gets too Genesee or Floyd-like usually gets binned. That's not to say that there aren't influences, just that we don't like the idea of being confined to the styles of those particular figureheads. The spirit of progressive rock music was carried by lots more people than Genesis. I think that too many of us use the obvious source, the 70s bands, and forget to look around us and see what our contemporaries are up to. Over the years, the band has had many manifestos, all of which are still relevant to the future of the Tangent. Please welcome British keyboardist, singer, composer, best known for his work in the progressive rock bands Parallel or 90 Degrees and The Tangent, Andy Tillison, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Andy.
Hello there, mate. Yeah, well, that was a nice build up. Thank you very much indeed.
Hi, you're very welcome.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you, Ray.
I got to admit, man, I first heard you guys on Morrow Prog Radio. I listen to that a lot. I'm a big progressive rock fan, and I became a huge fan of The Tangent, and this was recently. I mean, I go back, it reminds me of when I first discovered Camel, you know, way back when. You guys are incredible.
Well, that's nice of of you to say so. Yeah, it's always nice to be discovered, whether it's earlier in our career or later in our career. You know, it's always nice when people finally hook onto us and everything like that. You know, we do what we. I mean, you read out what our manifesto kind of is, I suppose, and we still try to live up to that. Yeah, and I'm glad you see it that way, Ellen.
You know, there's so many great, not great, but very good prog bands out there. And I guess Morrow is one of the, you know, best resources today to find out who's really out there. But you know, when I heard you guys, I was totally blown away. The musicianship in the band is just incredible. And your latest album, which I believe came out in 2018, I love a lot. I gave it 5 stars.
That's very good of you. I'm glad you did. It was quite well received. It was our last album, Proxy. I was very pleased about it. You know, it was our 10th album, and of course, there's always that difficulty of we did start with a bang. Our first album was very well received and everything, and you know, obviously we had to do a lot of thinking to make sure that it wasn't just a flash in the pan, because at the time there was only going to be one Tangent record, but you know, it was just something, it was so successful, the record company were keen to carry on with it, and I think I was too, to be fair. So since that point, we've had to kind of plan what we're going to do with it and where it's going to go next and that kind of thing. And I think that although it's been difficult, because of course, you know, progressive rock bands nowadays certainly don't command the amount of financial input that they used to do.
Right.
So we still managed to as I say, record 10 albums, get out, tour right round the world, I suppose. You know, we played from Russia to Russia to Chicago and all points in between, I guess. And you know, it's been a great time. We've been together at this band for 15 years, and like you say, we've had plenty of people in and out of the group, but there's been some constants, and I think that those constants, it's beginning to settle now, actually, after 15 years, that we're beginning to kind of feel like there's people who were in the band rather than people who were just passing through it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, you have an incredible guitar player, a nice young, great guitar player, and he's you know, he really shines on this album as well. As so do you, you know. But Proxy is a great album. You said it was not a concept album; it's more or less a collection of songs that loosely belong together. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah, and that, to be honest, is pretty much the way I like to operate. I don't really go so much for the concept album,
right,
as a format myself. We've done one album which I reckon was getting on to be a concept album, but and that was called Le Sacre du Travail, which was made in 2013, and that was very much a loosely based concept about the working day and the way we give our lives to our jobs for not very much in return, apart from, you know, enough money to have a roof over our heads. I wouldn't call it a concept album in the way The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway or Snow or Subterranean is a concept album. It's, you know, it's less that kind of thing and more a themed album, really. And I think that's pretty much the way I like to work, to be honest.
You know, I love your philosophy because you talk, each song is something, you know, that relates to something in your life, you know, or something that's happened, and sometimes you have to go back and make a new song to let everyone know what's happening now with the news that you mentioned in another album. You know, it's really, really neat the way you know, structure these songs, and it's all about life itself, you know, it's reality. You know, like you said, there's no, you know, what was the word you used in my intro? I can't remember now, but there's no fantasy. There's no fantasy. Yeah, and a lot of... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, one thing that I've often noticed is missing from a lot of interviews and things, is that whether people don't feel it the same way as I feel it, but we often talk about, you know, one album of a band in isolation and talk about, oh, yeah, Dark Side of the Moon and this band. Now, we take them as very separate things, and Dark Side of the Moon and Animals or, you know, a Memento Lapse of Reason. We take those as finished items. And I don't actually see that. You know, I kind of see that as, you know, that Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd is the thing. And the various points of Pink Floyd are just chapters within it. They're kind of like the tracks on the album. And Pink Floyd and its whole history is the album. And right. I think that what we try to do with the Tangent is to make the whole story from where we first started in 2002 to 2003 to now is in effect the same kind of thing. If we have to call ourselves a work of art, right, as I hope that most bands do think of themselves as being artists, and you know, but to me the creation is the Tangent. It's not something the Tangent makes albums and everything like that, or that we have been the Tangent, and that all our work is all our work, you know, that's the thing. And I think that's an important thing, that to have an overview of what you've done and be working towards it, so that tells an overarching story as well as the individual albums. That's something I like to work towards, and feel I'm working on it all the time. And obviously, you know, one day it'll stop, but not until they nail my coffin shut.
Well, the band has stuck to their guns with all those albums. You know, you haven't ventured out of who you are, which I admire a lot. You know, there are a lot of prog bands that you know, have sold out, and one of those guys is Phil Collins. You know, I was very disappointed when Phil Collins went off on his own and did the you know, R&B stuff on the radio and things like that. I mean, you just don't do that. not coming from a band like Genesis. You know, Genesis was like a band, like it was a religion, just like Yes was in the beginning, you know. And you guys are pure, you know, you guys are very, very talented, very, very talented.
When you mentioned Phil Collins, of course, the thing is that obviously, I mean, I've got a lot of beef about Genesis, to be honest, but right. Like, you know, that doesn't matter because in the end, they don't even know who I am, so it wouldn't be of any consequence to them whatsoever. But you know, I obviously feel that, like, you know, Phil Collins came into the band, he got the gear, he got a job, and everything like that, and you know, who's to say that it was the band for him for his whole life, you know? And he wanted to go off and do something else. He wanted to do something more pop-like, and of course he went and did it, and he was wildly successful at it, and of course he turned Genesis round to be a completely different kind of band altogether from in the 80s from the one they were in the 70s.
Exactly.
And, you know, although personally I will always prefer the 1970s material that they did, you know, what they did was valid, and but just not as much my cup of tea, you know. And in the end, there's no point in getting annoyed with them and saying, oh, it's terrible, you know. you just enjoy the records they made that you do like.
Right.
Because there's plenty of other really great music out there, and I don't have to worry. I don't know why everybody's so worried about, wouldn't it be great if Genesis made one more great album when Reiner Stoltz made 28, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
There's so much to hear, so much great music, of adventurous music. And of course, like the tangent, you know, we do pop songs, and as well as doing our really serious stuff. And I think that tying yourself to one genre and limiting yourself and saying, okay, those are the border lines, we can't move beyond those, I think that's just restrictive. And you know, I think that people like Stephen Wilson and ourselves and a number of other bands are all prepared to move outside the genre and explore other areas, you know, because of the fact that, you know, we've obviously, you know, we're not young, and we've got a vast amount of musical experiences and influences built up over the years. And, you know, so, you know, like any other person who's 6 years older and have kids at some point, you know, in the 1980s, and they grew up during the 90s, we all got to hear the Spice Girls a lot. We all got to hear what our sons were listening to, and daughters.
Right.
And, you know, in my case, Oasis, Radiohead, Spice Girls,
right.
and Destiny's Child and stuff. And this stuff grows on you. You get into the music with your kids, and it has an influence on you. And,
right.
Of course, during the 1970s, whilst I was buying all the Yes albums and loving them and, absolutely falling in love with the music, on the radio they were playing Earth, Wind and Fire, and I was falling in love with that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think we should be restricted, but we centred ourselves, certainly, in the progressive rock arena. I think that's perfectly fair to say. And of course, I've always totally loved that form of music, but I don't want to be restricted by it. And of course, this is how the original bands came together in the first place. They didn't have a template to work to. They just created this music, and that's why they were all completely different. And I think that, you know, we have to be different to Big Big Train. I think the Big Big Train have to be different to Magenta. And, you know, and I think all of us have to be different to the Mars Hollow, you know. So how do we do that? Well, you know, just listen to all the stuff that we normally do, and it's bound to be different. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I love R&B. You know, I was a top 40 disc jockey back in the late 70s, and I played a lot of, you know, new wave music. The Cars were big. I mean, disco was there with Donna Summer and that kind of thing. But there's a seriousness about prog rock, just like there's a seriousness with classical rock or classical music. When you want to get serious about life and reflect on the world and your being and that kind of thing, that's where music, you know, like Yes and the Tangent and Everest, Lake and Palmer and the Camel and that kind of thing, that it just brings it, you know, it goes into your soul, you know what I mean? The top 40 stuff and, you know, like you were saying, R&B and things like that, it doesn't it's fun music, but it doesn't reach down into your soul like prog rock does. You know, there's a seriousness about the music.
Yeah, I get that, and I do love that aspect of it. Of course, I do.
Right.
I mean, I like the depth of it.
Right.
I like the fact that, you know, I can lose myself in the music and go
exactly.
on journeys whilst I'm listening to it. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, you know, back in the day, I'd put on Close to the Edge, and I'd go on travels with it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd see things in my mind, and it's a place to lose yourself.
Right.
Of course, you know, the same with the more sort of like tangible sort of stuff that Roger Waters used to write about life in general. I really enjoyed getting into all that too. You know, but at the same time, I love a great pop tune, and you know, from S Club 7 through to my favourite record of all time is Ain't No Mountain High Enough by Diana Ross. I mean, you know, if I only was allowed one record on my desert island, that'd be it, you know, because it's got everything. Big arrangement, fabulous singer, wonderful chorus, great lyrics, and hope in its heart. It's an absolutely fantastic piece. So, you know, I just think that you can hear them all over Yes's early albums, and different ways of looking at things. And I think that the great thing about progressive rock music is that it's an incredibly big fusion of different styles. No matter which band you choose, you're listening to one certain fusion. And Hatfield and the North would be putting, sort of like jazz together with whimsical folk music in a way, and same with Caravan. And Yes, it would bridging sort of like country music with Steve Howe. He played a lot of kind of like Cajun stuff.
Yep.
Mixed with Stravinsky and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, who were putting Dark together with Atomic Rooster. You've just got so many different fusions that are possible. And I think that, I think a lot of bands since 1980 started off with using a progressive rock band as the kind of main influence. So, I don't think you can deny it. I don't want loads of phone calls from my Ray Marillion fans, but Marillion started off as a band who sounded like Genesis, and I don't think you can really argue with that. And when they did, they became a first band to sort of like have built their sound on another progressive rock band sound, whereas the original lot had all built their sound on something completely different, which is why they all sounded so different at the time.
Right.
And I just wanted, when I started my little fusion with the Tangents, I looked at the various different things I wanted to do in the Tangent sound to start with, and then made that sound. And of course you can hear the influences all over it. I'm not claiming its originality in any way, and never would, but just got those certain sort of like stimuli, those certain little influences which we wear on our sleeve quite happily.
Sure.
But the mixture, that particular sort of like way we work, is what we do, and that's us, and it's recognisable, and it means that we're not the same as the Flower Kings. It means we're not the same as Big Big Trey. We use a lot more jazz than those bands, and that just makes us who we are, and it makes them who they are, and we're all different, and that's the great thing about the whole musical form in the first place.
Right.
We just don't sound the same as each other.
You don't, and there is a lot of progressive rock that does. But, like you said, you might hear a little bit of, Camel or Emerson, Lake and Palmer and this and that. But, no, you guys got your own style. That's why I'm so excited about the band. And like you said, you got a lot of jazz in there, and to me, it's like, it's deep. It's like the from the roots of jazz comes out, with the prog and you guys are, and you're, I love your voice too. There's a little, sometimes, I don't know if I'm right or wrong about this, sometimes you sound like Ian Anderson. But that's a good thing.
That's not something I try for or anything. In fact, I don't usually get that said about myself. It's usually another friend of mine who gets that, but not me.
I've heard it in a few songs.
Sort of like, end up with, I'm often sort of like... I think that a lot of my vocal style has to be said. I try to model it on one of my heroes.
Right.
That's Peter Hamill from Van der Graaf Generator, who are probably my favourite band of all time when it comes down to if we were to have that kind of debate. There's a lot of Peter Hamill vocal styling, which I found very useful to try to be able to emulate in that way. Of course, I've taken other singers into account, like Lee Jackson from The Knights, because he wasn't very good as a singer. And to be honest, I think the fact is that I know, and I've always known, and I'm the first to admit that I am not a good singer. But Lee Jackson was a real inspiration to me, because I could say, okay, he isn't a good singer either, but what he does in the band works. And I was able to listen to think, okay, how does somebody who can't sing as well as Greg Lake or John Anderson or different set of priorities.
Sure.
And, you know, my priorities are not about commercial success at all, you know.
Right.
I'm not the slightest bit interested, really, in trying to make the band more palatable so I make more money. Because, you know, if I was doing, if that was the kind of thing I was doing, I wouldn't be in prog rock to start with.
I'd be
doing something that makes a lot more money. I'm in prog rock because this is what I say, it's what I want to say.
Yeah.
And so, consequently, I actually see myself as a composer and lyricist, and that's before I see myself as a keyboard player, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I think lyrics is a really, really important thing for me. When I start writing music, I think, what's it about? You know, what am I writing about here? And a lot of the lyrics, when I've written them, to try to get this concept over is a little bit difficult sometimes, but when you're actually singing a piece of music, you're not just singing it, you're saying the words,
right.
And the way you say them is really, really important to me. Now, sometimes I've tried getting a much, much better singer in than I am, and I find that they sing it, and it sounds great and everything, but when I listen to it, they're not saying the same thing,
mm-hmm.
They're saying it in a different way.
Right.
And consequently, I think, it sounds nicer, but the meaning of the words is not coming over in the way they were intended to be.
Exactly.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
So, well, particularly if they're actually singing my words, then it's almost like they're reading from a script, and, you know, they're thinking more about how it works musically than how it works in a piece of narrative. And I think that's something that I eventually realized, it's got to be me who sings, because I know what I want to say.
Sure.
And how I want it to be said. And I think that any singer who I worked with just wanted to kill me, because they said, no, you put the wrong the wrong amount of weight on
right.
the word of.
Right.
And it probably wants to kill me within a week.
No, you need to sing your own lyrics.
I'm staying over because I'm a radio ham, you know, and I'm talking. It's
weird. Back to the album once again. The Melting Andalusian Skies was probably one of my favorites. I mean, you had classical, you had jazzy, incredible track, incredible piece of music. I can't say, you know, much more how much I love the band. The group is incredible, and I've interviewed a lot of guys. You know, I've interviewed all of ELP, the Moody Blues, Steve Hack, a lot of prog guys, and I am really happy with the group. I love the Tangent. It's a great band.
Well, it's fantastic to hear that and be mentioned with all those other people, and thank you very much.
It's a great band.
The Melting Andalusian Skies is absolutely great for all those people who don't like my voice, because they don't sing on it. it's an instrumental.
And
we've been doing a couple of instrumentals on the past couple of albums, and I've enjoyed that. We're making another album at the moment.
Oh, good.
And there aren't many just instrumentals on that, although, of course, there's a load of instrumental stuff. That one was written during a very creative time. I think I wrote about this the other day. I had a heart attack in 2015, and after it was over, and I'd got over all the kind of depression that followed one of those things,
mm-hmm.
I suddenly had this really big creative moment, and
right.
managed to make I wrote about four jazz fusion instrumentals, one after the other, just in a matter of days, and one of them was called Dr. Livingston, I presume, and the other one became one of them became The Melting Andalusian Skies, and they were on consecutive albums.
Right.
I'm glad you like that track. It's one of my favourites, actually.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed doing that one. I enjoyed recording it, and I'm pretty pleased with it. I'm glad it made your favour.
Another one, the Adulthood Lie. Whose vocals are on that? Is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
That is you. Yeah.
The Adulthood Lie, of course, is a really important thing for the Tangent. You know, I wanted to try something completely different on that track,
right.
and that was afterwards find different musical sources that were around at the time they were playing, you know, from 1968 to the early 1970s, listening to the music that was going on around them at the time to build up their sound. Well, I thought, well, okay, let me take a snapshot of what's happening in the world around me right now and what kind of music is really big out there and everything. And of course, you know, the world out there was kind of made up of lots of dance music, dubstep and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of thought, surely, if Yes can sort of like invent progressive rock music based on sort of like, you know, pop songs of the time, TV theme tunes and modern jazz and Stravinsky at the time, surely I could make a piece of prog rock, pure prog rock out of dance music. So not only did we decide to try and do that, we decided we would do the album's epic track, you know, the longer track on the album, as a dance track, you know, electronic dance music, that turned into a prog rock song with different time signatures, different sections, ups and downs, proper progressive format, but made up out of electronic dance music. And I think that is one of our most successful experiments, because a lot of people found it quite a joyful experience and something that was completely different. I think we pulled something out of the bag for that one. I think another couple of artists since we did that have thought that was a good idea and done it too, so I'm pleased about that.
Yeah, it also touches a nerve for us guys who are getting older too. You know, you got the worst part about getting old is remembering when you were young. That's a great say. It's an older man that is saying that on the track, rekindle the fire in my heart. You know, these are great lines.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it was a case of, you know, a lot of us grew up and
yeah.
Because we grew up, you know, there's that period in your life when you just think, oh, nothing's ever as good as it used to be. And
like now.
It's when dance music and ether pop music and all the raves were happening in the 1990s, I was being very snobby about it. Oh, no, it's not music, DJs, all that kind of stuff. That's not music.
Right.
And then looking back on it, I kind of think, God, they had a fantastic time. Look at those crowds of people enjoying themselves. How much they loved that music. Doesn't matter who was creating it. Doesn't matter whether it was a DJ or a band or anybody. Just look at the love that they got out of that music. And I realised to myself, I missed it. I missed it because I was too busy being snobby and going, oh, progressive rock music is far better than this kind of thing. I missed it.
Yeah.
And what's the point of missing good things in life? I mean,
yeah, it's true.
I wrote about it ruefully, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I think that the message of the song, towards the end, the most important line is, there's still time.
There's still time, right. Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately for me, the time meant that I could go back and discover an awful lot of that and come forward and enjoy the stuff that's happening now. And, you know, because it's all just fantastic different tastes from all over the world, all over time and everything. And I just love music, you know. I love to give everything a chance. I think that's all it is. And it inspires the other musicians in the band as well, because they really like the fact that, you know, Jonas loves the fact that as well as getting to play sort of like the usual kind of prog rock epics, he really is happy to get a really good funky bass line to get to play.
Yeah, exactly.
And something that's got a bit of a groove. And sometimes, you know, the tangent's music, I said the tangent's music, gets a bit sexy from time to time, you know. You know, it's got a bit of a swagger to it. And, you know, I'm not in any way suggesting that the
Well, you got some funky prog, jazzy prog in a couple of your tunes, like Proxy, you know, very, very jazzy, funky, and the other one, A Case of Misplaced Optimism, you know, sounded a little bit like Jeff Beck in a way. Then I heard a little Sade, very funky track, and great sax. Love the sax. I can listen to sax all day. Great tune.
Yeah, sax. all the old black slayers have to do is be able to go there. Yeah. Everybody goes, oh, that's great. They only do play three notes.
I know.
But like, yeah, I mean, like, Theo's an absolutely great guy. I mean, what a fantastic saxophonist.
Yep. Theo and, Travis. Yep.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrific. I mean, like, yeah, the tangent's been, the tangent's sort of like, I've often joked about it, so it's like a kind of, it's like a path to promotion. The people who've been to the tangent, we were obviously, Jonas is now playing with Steve Hackett.
Mm-hmm.
Theo Travis is with the Soft Machine and played with Dave Gilmour on tour, on his last tour.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Jacko's in King Crimson.
Right.
So is Gary Harrison, who played with us once. And Luke's playing for, Francis Dunner, is it Bites and stuff. Everybody's doing very well, except
sure.
me. because I've just got to focus on writing the stuff. that's my real only thing I do, I guess, really. I've never been a kind of, a session guy. I'm predominantly interested in just, composing and writing my own music. I guess that sometimes, it'd be nice to get a tour with a band that I like. I nearly got a Camel gig once, but
really?
That felt a bit when they managed to find another guy who'd already been in the band at one point before and already
right.
knew the stuff. So I lost that one. So that's just the way of the world.
The last track on the album, I just want to mention, Exo Oceans, another, brilliant piece, very spacey, jazzy. The whole album is incredible, and I'm really looking forward to the next album. When is it the new album coming out, and who's going to be on it?
You're talking about the bonus track on Proxy there, which is a piece of
right.
electronic, sort of like Tangerine Dream kind of
exactly.
stuff, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's actually taken from my solo album, which is called Exo Oceans.
Oh, okay.
We just put that on there to hopefully sell a few copies of Exo Oceans,
uh-huh.
which we did, so that's all right. The new Tangent album is currently just being mixed now. It's due to be finished within the next couple of weeks, and you'll probably be seeing the album out somewhere in August, coronavirus permitting, and all that kind of stuff. which obviously it's really nice to be not talking about too much. So,
I know, exactly.
Because of course, making a prog rock album this week does seem like a bit of a kind of secondary piece of information, but, I think that we just have to carry on and do what
sure.
I can, and hope I'm still alive at the end of it all. And,
you'll be fine.
And if I'm not, well, the album at least will be finished. In that way, I think that this is a really nice Tangent record.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've followed any previous interviews I've done and stuff, but
I have.
In general,
I have.
I don't like to listen to my own music too much. I never really am totally happy with what I do. I'm just one of those guys,
right.
Some people love their own music. I'm not the king. And, I don't think it's because I don't like it. Of course I like it, but I think it's just by the time I reach the end, I'm so sick of hearing it,
right.
I never want to hear it again. But this album, for the first time in, since 1987, when I first started recording
uh-huh.
a band, I'm kind of actually really enjoying hearing it.
Good.
And that's very strange for me, so... Maybe it means that everybody else will make it. it's just nice for me to be enjoying making the record, and I can't wait for people to hear it, of course. And that's the same every time. So yeah, this is the 11th album, and it's going to be called Auto Reconnaissance, or Auto Reconnaissance, depending on how you pronounce it.
Right.
But I mean it in the French way, which means looking at ourselves, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means. And it's kind of just a
Very good. And also parallel or 90 degrees. What's happening with that?
We haven't actually, we haven't done anything for a very long time.
Right.
And I'm not sure that we will. But
another great group.
It was a band that I, yeah. It was a band I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
And in many ways, it was, that was the band I really wanted to have a breakthrough.
Uh-huh.
It just couldn't happen. I mean, you know, but after we did the PO 90 stuff, we did it for a number of years. We started in about 1996 with the band of that name, and we had one, two, three, four, five albums out. Then the Tangent opportunity arose, and basically the sixth PO 90 had been released, and essentially the first Tangent record sold more copies than the entire history of PO 90.
Really?
In 4 weeks.
Ah.
4 weeks. That's all it took. And the thing was is that I just had to look at it and think, you know, I want to be a musician. This is, you know, who I want to be, and it's just obvious that my path, my career path, lies down this road. We did get PO 90 back together again, and we did make another record, and that was good. And I'm not ruling it out at all. I'd love to work with those guys again, but I actually feel that I let those people down, to be honest, and I don't feel good about it. I'd love to make another record with PO 90. It's just a question of whether I would ever be able to persuade them to do it.
Yeah. The songs like what? Blues for Lear, right? That's from the band. The Time Capsule.
Yeah, well, Blues for
another.
Blues for Lear was originally a PO 90 song.
Okay.
We it was recorded on the album. I think it was on the Time Capsule.
Great tune. Great tune.
And of course, it later got redone and reimagined with Roy Nastolt on guitar, and which was going to be on the first Tangent album, but we decided not to. But it's mainly a PO 90 song. Is that one? Yeah.
Migraine, another parallel 90 degrees.
Yeah, Migraine on. Yep. That was definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah. Me too.
We did some good stuff. And
you did great stuff.
PO 90 was quite an innovative band at the time. We were operating in pretty much the same set of venues and areas of recording. I mean, we were around with the early Porcupine Tree, you know.
Right.
That was our kind of, there was us, there was them, there was all the Unicorn, and a fair few other kind of like experimental bands who weren't quite prog, but were leaning that way. And, that's what PO 90 was.
Great band. I mean, you know, equally, you know, the Tangent and that band as well. I mean, I could be on a desert island and listen to those two band groups, and I'd be happy.
Well, that's good. At the moment, I'm listening to, I've got an awful lot of music I listen to at the moment. I'm currently discovering a couple of older artists that are really turning me on.
Like who?
Is a DJ producer, musician,
right.
Called Square Pusher.
Okay.
And I'm listening to a lot of his music. It's fantastic for me. I really like it. And the other guy I'm discovering is Pat Metheny.
Oh, Pat Metheny,
The American guitar player.
Yeah.
And maybe Canadian, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I could never work these people out. but absolutely amazing, both of them. And, I'm learning new stuff from them. I hope that learning process goes on for the rest of my life, you know.
Cause, right.
That's what it's all about. I just love to organize sound into things that other people like to hear.
I had one of the guys that you kind of admired on the show, Bill Nelson from Bebop Deluxe.
Oh, right. Well, he used to live not very far away from
really?
Me, actually, you know, so, yeah, I'm from the same area of England.
Yeah, he's a good guy, you know, great band, also a great band. You grew up, actually, when you were younger, you grew up listening to classical music, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that was it. I mean, my mum was a very, very musical lady, and she had a fantastic record collection with all the real greats in, you know, obviously, so Beethoven's Bach,
right.
Mozart, and everything, but there was also, you know, Shostakovich, and there was Rimsky-Korsakov, Prokofiev, Bitsa Stravinsky. She was never so keen on Stravinsky herself, but she had a couple of records. And then she liked quite a lot of early music, you know, Palestrina, Madrigals, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, she had a couple of Glenn Miller albums, which was really nice and cool to listen to. And she played the piano, and of course, I just gradually worked my way through all these fantastic records she had. And I loved the Beethoven symphonies. And,
right.
You know, I think I've mentioned it before that I used to put on the Pastoral Symphony number 6.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, it's supposed to be about the countryside and everything, but to me, this is where it goes back to music telling stories, which
right.
is, you know, that's kind of like AndyTillison.com. That's what I'm all about, is telling stories mm-hmm. in music. And the Beethoven Pastoral Symphony was a space opera to me. It was about this fantastic adventure in space. And when I heard it, I wasn't seeing fields and stuff. I was seeing spaceships and planets and nebulae and different galaxies and the rings around strange planets and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff. And I made up my own stories as I listened to the music. And I think that, you know, that just, as I grew up, it just kind of translated into as I was writing the music, I was also writing the story in my head. And that's really, you know, where it's all come from.
Plus, you were a big fan of the Canterbury bands as well, right?
I love Canterbury music.
Yeah.
Of course I do. I mean, you know, particularly the Dave Stewart arm of it.
Right.
You know, I think that Ed Hatfield, the North, National Health, Bruford, that particular arm of it is something that's just fantastic. I love Dave Stewart's playing and his mm-hmm. voicing and his compositions. He is probably my favourite keyboard player, composer that I've ever had. You know, it's just absolutely fantastic. Totally underrated. I think that if you've been an American, you guys would have given him a Grammy. Over here, nobody's ever heard of him because we're just very, very stuck in the mud. I mean, like, you know, over there, kind of, you treat your career like it's royalty, and over here, nobody knows who he is.
Yeah.
It's very sad. That's what about being British is all about,
right.
unfortunately, sometimes. The really talented people get nothing, and it's a very sad
situation.
It is sad.
I agree.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah, I loved Caravan, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I like the more off, left field Canterbury stuff like Henry Cow.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Dutch Canterbury scene as well, like Superfisher. They were great.
Mm-hmm.
The only band, strangely enough, that I've never really succeeded in getting into is the Soft Machine, which is really strange. And I still can't do it. I went to see them, really enjoyed it. Theo was playing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I'm going to get into the Soft Machine. And I came back and I thought, right, well, I shall listen to Third and Sixth. I just didn't get it. one day it'll happen. Don't forget, I'm the guy who did. I've never quite managed to get into Zappa yet, you know.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird. But, like, the thing is I've said right through my whole life,
mm-hmm.
one day I'm going to have nothing to do and I'm going to get into Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the coronavirus is the ideal moment to get into Frank Zappa. So, you know, probably in 30 years' time when people say to that old man in the corner of the home, do you remember the coronavirus?
Yeah.
That was Doctor, you know. So, yeah, I'll probably start listening to some of that. As soon as I finish my own album, you know, I'll just sit down and listen to some really cool sounds that I haven't managed to catch up on yet.
Well, one guy, I think, from the Canterbury scene, I had him on my show. He's a great guy, Steve Hillage, guitar player. Good guy.
Yeah, great. I mean, fantastic. Yeah, and of course, like, Fish Rising had Dave Stewart on it. So, and of course, he was also in National Health for a little while with Steve Hillage.
Right.
Had the band Khan, K-H-A-N, who I really liked, made one album, and Steve Hillage was in that, and Dave Stewart was in that. So, really, really great. I met Steve Hillage several times, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a lot of albums out, you know, and he's one of those guys. I mean, besides Gong, you know, he had all this solo stuff out and probably wasn't, you know, recognized enough for his solo work, which he should have because they're, you know, he put out some great music. He really did.
Yeah, and he's done a lot of dance music as well.
Yes, that's right.
I really rate that. I like the 6 and 7 stuff.
He sure did.
You know, he's a guy who wasn't prepared to just be limited by what there is. So, yeah, I like him a lot.
Yeah, he had a partner, right? I don't think that was his wife, was it? With a woman that was
Miquette Jehudi.
Yeah, right.
Miquette Jehudi, that's her name.
Right, right. What was the first album that you bought that really touched you? Like me, prog rock really touched me. You know, Jeff Beck, you know, when I listen to like Diamond Dust, you know, that song, it really, you know, goes into my soul, you know, that kind of thing. What was the first album, the album that really got to you? Close to the Edge?
Close to the Edge, though, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, I mean, it was just, I heard it, some kids were around at our house, my mum and dad used to have an after church party on Sundays where the young people from the church would come round to our house, which was a vicarage, you know, my mum and dad were, you know, in the clergy kind of thing. So, like, you know, these kids would come round, they'd bring their records. I wasn't old enough to come downstairs at the time, so these young people came into the house. Of course, they looked like big people to me because I was small. And one of them had brought Close to the Edge, and I listened to it at the top of the stairs coming out of the dining room.
Right.
And out of the lounge, I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. And I thought, how will I ever find out who that record was by? When somebody was walking out of the house, I just saw the green record cover. I thought, that's it. That's the album. That must be the record I heard. And I decided, I got my pocket money, and I went down to the record shop, and I found the green record, and I bought it, and it was the right one. And I've loved it ever since. I was 12 years old when I bought it.
12 years old, huh? Yeah. How about that? One of my first albums was probably Uriah Heep. One of the first ones from Uriah Heep, and I was, you know, I was about the same age as you were. Salisbury, maybe. Yeah.
Demons and Wizards.
I think that was the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, Angels and Demons. That's a bloody Tom Brown novel. The Dan Brown novel.
I got to interview Mick Box backstage at a House of Blues show. He's a great guy. He looks fantastic for his age. I mean, you know, he still looks like a kid.
Once again, that's a band I don't know too much about. I've
really?
Heard them and everything, and like what I've heard, but you know, I don't know too much about them. They were all more on the kind of hard rock.
Right.
Time.
Yeah.
I like Deep Purple and Black Sabbath and all those guys as well, of course.
Yep.
But equally, as I say, I like S Club 7 and the Spice Girls. So, I just flick between what I want to listen to and I get something out of all of it, really.
Yeah. What was the first concert you ever went to?
There's an official answer. I got tickets for two concerts at the same time.
Okay.
The concert that, if I really wanted it, it was actually the second concert I went to, was Thundergruff was just a mind-opening experience.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I sat there one night watching Hugh Banton, the organ player with Thundergruff, and I think that was the night I sat there and I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to do what he's doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Richard similarly inspired me, you know, when I first heard Close to the Edge, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of thought, I want to do what he's doing.
Right.
But I think that when I saw Hugh live, Hugh Banton, who's a friend of mine now, you know, that there was something more real about it. You know, he didn't wear a cape for a start.
He's just
a kind of regular guy who looked a bit like me, I guess. You know, I'd like to be like he is. You know, I'd like to be involved in a band like that. And
yep.
You know, and Thundergruff didn't tell jokes. Well, of course, the Rick Wakeman band was all about jokes and looking about and bits of Doogie Woogie, knocking about all over the place, you know, because Rick does tend to sort of do a bit of a circus act. But Thundergruff was my first proper gig, I think, yeah? You know what I mean?
Huh. Yeah, I was fortunate to interview all the guys from Yes, except for Steve Howe. He's the only one I haven't interviewed yet. And,
all right, well, okay, well, I mean, like, he's a genius.
Yeah, I know.
I think that, I mean, like, you know, obviously, you know, you have to temper the fact that, you know, a lot of these bands that we're talking about, you know, had this really fantastic creative period.
Yeah.
But, you know, since then, it's pretty much been a pretty thin on the ground for any quality material. But there's no doubting that in their heyday, they were absolutely unbelievable. And I think that, I still think that Steve Howe is probably the most recognizable and innovative guitarist I ever got.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Nobody else who's like him.
No.
He's just an incredible player.
Right.
Sorry, your voice is a bit quiet, so I hope I'm not walking all over.
No, not at all. I agree with you about Steve Howe, though. There's no one like him. He's got his own style. He plays acoustic. He plays electric. You know?
Yeah. It just does exactly the opposite of what anybody else would do. It's like, you know, you kind of think, who else would have thought of doing that?
Yeah.
At that point in the song. And, of course, you know, it's just... It's just amazing. And of course, I just love that band's classic period, you know. Everything from when they first started in the 1968-69 period, as far as, in my case, it's Relayer. You know, there were some nice moments after Relayer, but to me, as far as Relayer, that was the golden era, really, I guess.
It was.
And I still find that period of their career to be, you know, it's like I've often said, you know, probably getting a bit boring because I've been saying things like this in interviews for years, but like, it, you know, all that kind of stuff was happening whilst we were going to the moon, yeah? you know, 68 through to 74, you know,
right.
This is the Apollo program.
Right.
When all this music was being made, and then one day they stopped going back to the moon, and I guess that Yes stopped going back to the top of the ocean, like, you know, you know, it was a very, very long time before anyone went back, and I think that the first band to really go back to where Yes had been was the Flower Kings, and I think that when I first saw them, I just openly wept. I was so blown away to see a band who actually knew how to do that in their own way, and that was a big moment for me seeing the Flower Kings, yeah.
Well, I'm counting on the tangent, and I'm counting on you to not give it up, to keep it going, you know, and I hope you guys tour again. Is that possible?
We certainly want to. We've got plans for next year, so, for 2021.
Do you think you'll come to the...
We will probably go out and play a few shows, so...
Do you think you'll come to the States?
Providing the world is all still here, which I'm presuming it will be. That's the way it is.
Andy, do you think you'll come to the States? I know it's tough, you know.
Well, last time it was pretty tough, I have to say. Last time we came, it cost us, I think we spent $7,500 just to get in, not including the airfare.
Really?
That's how much it cost us to come to America, $7,500.
Wow.
And we left America having made round about $10,000.
Oh, my goodness.
So that we made a profit of $3,000.
Yeah.
For doing a whole tour. I think that it's just getting ridiculous to the point where
I know
to have to pay to come and play to you guys is difficult. Of course, it's the same for you guys coming over here.
Yeah.
We don't exactly make it easy, but it's certainly not as easy for us as it was back in the day
for
the bands that we've been talking about. Because they just used to jet all over the world, you know, and. They used to stick all the gear on the plane. Nowadays we can't do that. If you want to take a guitar on the aeroplane, they want more money.
I know.
Because it's a guitar. Why is the guitar more expensive than that person's face?
Yeah.
Because it's a guitar. What? it's an expensive business. The amount of messing about we had to do to get into the States last time, and we weren't sure. We were actually on tour in Europe, and we still didn't know if we were going to be okay to get into the States.
Yeah.
And finally, all came together, and I was still really nervous going through the airport. Are we going to get stopped? Are we going to get stopped? And at the second festival we played whilst we were over there, we found out that another band who were coming over to play with us, Wobbler, well, they had been stopped and they'd been sent back.
Really?
And I just thought, why did they do that? I mean, they've got loads of American people wanting to see this band from Norway, and they just sent them home for not having the right paperwork.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's a
shame. That is crazy. It's not going to get any easier.
It's not.
And of course, all the bands at the moment have just had to sort of
I know.
Go home in the middle of tours and things.
Yep.
And I just guess I'm very lucky that this time it wasn't me out on the road or anything. I was just at home making an album, which of course is the safest place to be.
Exactly.
I feel terribly sorry for Jonas, who had to come back. He was in Philadelphia, and they just called the whole tour off, and back he came.
Yeah. So many tours have been cancelled.
It's just really sad to see that happen.
Yeah. King Crimson's supposed to be on a lengthy tour as well, and that can't be a cheap tour for them because they have so many musicians on stage. You know, it's got to be expensive. So
yeah, well, that'll be canceled as well. Won't
yeah, that's canceled too. Yeah, it's a shame.
It's terrible.
Yeah, Andy, here's a question. Here's your last question, and I get some interesting answers from this. It's funny, all the Brits that I interview usually, they love the American. R&B, they like the American blues, but I think a lot of the Brits don't realize how much Americans love prog rock, and you guys should be very, very proud because that's your thing. Just like the blues came from, the early 20s and in America, Mississippi Delta and all that stuff, you guys invented prog rock, and that's, you should be very proud of that. And we take our prog very seriously in the United States. We really do. We really appreciate you guys for doing, such a great job with that.
Well, it's very nice that you say that. It is good to have been, obviously we come from a country where, in effect, this music did start, but, none of it would have happened without the blues that you've mentioned, of course, so it's all part of it. And of course, naturally, you've had a lot of really, really great prog bands from over your part of the world anyway. For example, a lot of people quite over here are really into their Swedish prog. And
uh-huh.
Of course, that's people like Anglagard and Anekdoten and things like that. But, all you have to do is find out that there was this American band called Cathedral who did it all years before, and you know, and of course there's Kansas, and naturally the Sticks, and Spock's Beard, amazing, right. And of course the Mars Hollow and Heliopolis, all those people. You know, I've really enjoyed your take on it, of course, and.
Yeah, but you know,
naturally, of course, from north of the border, you had Rush, who were a major player.
Yeah, but you guys are very humble when it comes to that. You know, I talk to all the guys from Emerson, Lake & Palmer, the Moody Blues, and they all say the same thing. You know, they all give so much credit to American music, and I don't. You guys developed your own style with prog rock. I mean, to me, you know, it came from the classical, you know, is where it really started, instead of the R&B and the blues. You know, you guys invented that. That's all you. That's all the Brits, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously we did have a big part to play in it, and of course, but, you know, that was a different generation of people to the one I knew, you know. They were my heroes as I was growing up, those guys who invented prog rock, and essentially, you know, I'm just one of the original kids who enjoyed that music, who wanted to play it himself, and so kind of, yeah, I followed them, but at the same time, you know, I discovered all the other progressive rock bands from all over the world, mm-hmm. Of course, you know, Focus from Denmark, Flying from Sweden, Kite Bath from Sweden, I've got millions of records from Italy, I'm a big fan of rock progressivo italiano, I've got stuff from Czechoslovakia,
right.
Poland, you know, Russia, the whole bloody world.
That's great.
And, I absolutely adore the stuff. So, you know, it became a worldwide thing, and it's great to know that it all kind of happened here, and that
yes.
John Anderson lived in the north of England.
Yes, that's right.
Not in the south, and, you know, that's always nice to know.
Yeah, you guys are amazing, you know, and I wish you would get more credit for that, because to me it's just as important, you know, as the blues and R&B, you know, and it's better musicians. The best musicians in the world are in prog bands. They really are. It's not easy music. It's complicated.
That's interesting. I actually think the best musicians are in Earth, Wind & Fire. I think that they're American, of course, but it's cool. We've got our own style. I mean, Americans are quite good at it. You're really good at being sort of like behind the beat, you know, kind of really good, sort of like funky feeling.
Right, right.
British guys, you know, I mean, you can follow. I mean, if you actually study it, you can actually follow the way British bands tended to be quite ahead of the beat, driving it along, forcing it along, and that went straight into punk rock, you know, to be honest. You know, you can hear that same excitement that you hear on a Damned record. You can still hear that the way Carl Palmer's driving Emerson, Lake & Palmer along.
Yeah.
But think of that against the sort of cool swing of Toto, the way their music sort of like, you know, makes you, you know, it makes you kind of feel more dancey, you know, British rhythm sections tend to make you want to pogo and headbang a bit more. I think that's part of the two characters of the different countries, and mm-hmm. I think that's great. You know, it's the way it works, and sometimes there's just nothing better than hearing American musicians slightly behind the beat deliberately, you know, and then hearing some British guys who are completely off their rockers ahead of it, trying to get to the end as fast as possible. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's funny, because I'm the opposite. I like British rock better than American rock. I grew up more, you know, with the Deep Purples and the Black Sabbaths, and you know, Tall was my hero, you know, Jethro Tull and Ian Anderson. I got to interview Ian Anderson twice, and, you know, very intelligent guy, and you remind me a little bit like of Ian Anderson, the way you talk and the way you think and everything, which I admire.
Oh, I'll say that's a compliment I will, be quite happy to accept. Anyway.
Very smart, very intelligent. Definitely, yeah. Okay, Andy, if you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie Field of Dreams, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Peter Hamill.
Who is that?
Peter Hamill.
Oh, okay.
From the Draft Generator.
Yeah. You really like that group.
Oh, yeah. That's the guy I'd like to work
with.
That's
the guy.
And actually, do you know, the other person who I'd really, really would like to work with is Neil Morse.
Yeah, I like Neil Morse.
The fact is that, you know, like, I think there's some ground to be... I've offered it. I've offered him, and I don't think he was particularly interested. But I've met him on a number of occasions, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
The thing is that he's a Christian, and I'm an atheist.
Okay.
I think it would be. I would love to make a record where we found common ground, positive ground together, and we're able to make a record that people would find useful, made by two people who have completely different views on religion, but do something that's for the good of everyone. I think that would be a great idea. I'd love to have done it. Last time I asked him, he said it was an interesting idea, but he hasn't got back to me on it. Peter Hamill doesn't really like working with many other people, but he's always had a tightly knit group of musicians around him. He's worked with very few people when you think of the length of his career. I don't think those things are ever likely to happen, but if it were to be possible, I would love to work with Peter Hamill, and that would make me a very happy man.
Well, if there's anything I can do, let me know. I know a lot of the Morse's PR guy. I was supposed to interview him once, way back when, a couple of times, as a matter of fact, and I turned it down for some reason. I don't remember why, but I don't know what happened. Andy, anything else you'd like to promote? You got the new album coming out, and you're working on that. What else? What else you got going on?
At the moment, I'm pretty well involved in making that one record. I will be making another electronic solo album after that.
Okay.
And we will be trying to get the band into tour next year.
Excellent. Yes, and we gotta not let this happen again, especially, you know, we can't keep closing and, you know, shutting down things every time there's a virus overseas. We gotta figure out a way where we don't have to shut things down. You know,
that's right. Yes, that's it. We've basically grafted a real virus onto an internet virus.
Exactly.
That's what the problem is.
Exactly right. Andy, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. Looking forward to more incredible music from you and the Tangent.
Thank you very much indeed. It's so nice of you to talk to me. Thank you for your part in publicizing and keeping progressive rock music in the media. Thank you very much, my friend.
And I'm a big fan of the Tangent. Love you. Love the music, and you guys are incredible. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care of yourself.
All right, Andy, you too.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Purchase the latest album by The Tangent, entitled Proxy, at Amazon.com. Five stars all the way. These guys are incredible. For more information about Andy Tillison and The Tangent, visit www.thetangent.org. That's their official website. Or you can go on Facebook, www.facebook.com/groups/allTangentMembers/about. That's on Facebook. And they're also on Twitter, twitter.com/thetangentmusic. Very special thanks to the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. And of course, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1. Truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. I do have a book trailer now available on YouTube. You can go right to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody, and please stay safe. Be well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.